Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Foment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. This is our 94th episode, and I'm very excited about that.
Woohoo!
We're in the middle of Cider Week, I'm about to make an announcement that does not have anything to do with cider, but our friend Charlie Papazian, the godfather of homebrewing and the Brewers Association, the author of The Complete Joy of Homebrewing, the Homebrewers Companion, both of which are celebrating their recent additions. He's visiting New York City, and he will be at 508 Gastro Brewery tomorrow night from 6:30 p.m. on till roughly about 8:39, and we're just going to hang out and drink some beer. And the following day, he will be at Bitter and Esther's for a homebrew swap starting at 7 p.m. The homebrew swap starts at 6 p.m., but he will be arriving at 7 and tasting everybody's beers. And man, it's Charlie fucking Papazian, man. I'm very excited about this.
All right. I'm going to give a shout out to a Kickstarter project that Chris and I recently backed.
Yes.
It is called the Fermentium Home Pickling Kit by Nicholas Stevens. And he has created a very cool container? Crock kind of thing called the Fermentium, and it's to make pickles, sauerkraut, kimchi, and all kinds of other fermented foods. So I would urge that you check it out. We will tweet it in a second when I get a chance on our break. But it's called the Fermentium Home Pickling Kit. We backed it. I cannot wait for this project to complete and for Chris and I to get our very own Fermentium.
And pickled stuff goes great with cider, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. What doesn't go right with cider? So Chris and I have been celebrating Cider Week, New York City Cider Week, since Friday. We've had a really good time. We attended Cider Feast at the South Street Seaport on Saturday. We've hung out with some cider makers, drank some great cider.
Then pressed some apples the following day at Bitter and Esther's.
Right.
Well, we didn't
awesome.
Press our own apples, but
we got to watch.
We got to watch.
And hang out. So we are in the middle of New York City Cider Week. If you are in New York City and you're interested in celebrating, please go to ciderweeknyc.com. They have a huge list of events. I mean, it's almost ridiculous.
It's getting better and better every year. There's more people, more awareness. And cider is a really, really, it's a fastly growing market, sector of the market.
And it's freaking delicious.
It is. It's worth getting into. Diversity is the spice of life. But today, in honor of Cider Week, we have our friend Devin calling from Bad Seed Cider, Hard Cider. Devin, are you there?
Yeah, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, good.
We've met you several times. We love your cider. Tell us a bit about Bad Seed Hard Cider.
Something kind of unique and interesting about us is that we are one of the few cider companies out there that we actually grow all our own apples, press all our own cider. We're actually a sixth-generation apple farm, and the seventh, Albert's son, is about 3 feet tall and already thinks he's the boss.
So you are partnered with Albert, Wilklow, right?
Yep.
And Wilklow Farms has been going on for six generations, which you just said. How big is the farm?
The farm itself is, we have the home farm where we do pick your own and stuff, has a good like 60 acres of apples. The farm where the cidery is actually located is about 20 acres of apples, and as well as like peaches, plums, grapes, like a little bit of everything there, but generally quite a bit of orchard right around us on the cidery.
How much cider do you produce?
This year, we're looking to probably end this year around like 20,000 gallons.
That is
awesome. So tell me, you have a really interesting history of how you got started. So tell me how you got started. Like, how did you guys meet and what happened?
Me and Albert actually grew up together at the same small town. 140 kids in our graduating class, so there's pretty much no avoiding anyone. But we were always friends growing up, and after high school, ended up renting an apartment together where, you know, kind of as two 20-year-old guys will do, with the inability to purchase alcohol, you learn really fast how to make alcohol. So we started I was always interested in home brewing, and Albert just started bringing home cider because, you know, he had plenty of from the farm, so we just started fermenting different ciders, and the first couple ones were pretty awful, and you had to shove them down friends' throats, but as your trial and error goes and you get better at it, you kind of, all of a sudden, we started to make cider that people were asking us for instead of us having to find a home for it.
When some of your first batches, were you inoculating it with yeast, or were you letting it just ride with the fresh juice from the farm?
We'd always been interested in different yeast strains and experimenting with that. I mean, right off the bat, we were, I had homebrewed for a while, so I was, actually had some beer yeasts that were in the fridge, and some of our first batches were messing around with different beer yeasts that we had that to ferment it, and, like, that's kind of where we stumbled upon, the notion that cider can change drastically just by the yeast strain that you're using, and like it'll completely change the flavor profile right down to the finished color of it.
Awesome.
Sorry, we're providing for questions for you. As far as like between us, your first ferment then was not a cider. Your first ferment was a beer. You started with beer.
Yeah. I was always interested in my first kit was something I had purchased off of online and just like got one of those little extract kits and that was my first intro into like fermenting something at home, and then did quite a few beers before Albert moved, me and Albert got an apartment together, and then it just kind of he was a celiac or has celiacs, so my fermenting beer didn't help him much, so
yeah.
He started bringing home gallons of cider, kind of as a notion of like, you know, hey, why don't you ferment this, and then I can have it too.
Awesome. I was going to ask, what was the tipping point from you guys making cider at home to actually kind of coming up with the idea for Bad Seed?
It was one of those like crazy ideas that we were doing farmers markets in Fort Greene in Brooklyn, and had been driving, you know, you're driving back and forth every Saturday together, and you kind of, we had brought down a couple bottles a few times for just good customers to try, just like, you know, kind of like, hey, try the stuff that we were making in our apartment, and over the course of like a couple months, we'd given quite a few bottles out, and we had always gotten kind of that same response. Like, you know, people were like, we were making like dry cider, which was completely like new and not out there on the market at that point. Like there was everything out there was like sweet mass produced cider.
Yeah.
And we were giving some bottles out, and everyone's response was like, you guys should really make this. Like it should be, have you guys thought about making this? And at first, we kind of, like, you know, blew it off, like, you know, like, oh, that's lots of legal stuff. That would be a little too intense for us. But then you kind of start just talking on the ride home, and then all of a sudden one night I got home, and at like 11 o'clock at night, my phone rings, and Albert, in all seriousness, is like, he's like, so, I'll ask you a question, and, like, seriously, like, what do you think about starting a cider company? And all it took was, like, us both, like, you know, acknowledging that, like, you know, hey, like, we could do this. It could be, you know, something that would work in theory. And So we kind of, you know, hit the ground running and ran out. And first thing we did was get an attorney to do all the paperwork side, because we were like, yeah, that's a little too much. And all it took was us looking at the TTB's website, and we were like, yep, got to be a person who will do this and just charge us.
Yeah. Your beers, I mean, sorry, your ciders are very, very dry and very clean. My first ferment was a cider, but it was not exactly. I was in a dorm in high school, and we took a. I've told this story a couple different times here, but I think it's interesting. You came straight from beer, but I came from cider. But the cider I made, I got a jar of apple juice from the farmer's market. We spit in it and threw it in the closet for a month, and then had something that was fermented and vaguely resembled cider, but had the alcohol. But your first ciders that you were making. So you were coming from a beer background. How important do you think sanitization and of your equipment and?
Oh, it's something I constantly like stress to people. I'm like, there's kind of that like I saw a great cartoon once in a brewery, and it still sticks with me to this day. It was this picture of what the world thinks of me. And it showed this guy, holding up a wine glass and, peering through it and sniffing it. And he's like, what my family thinks of me. And it showed him with, beakers and, lab equipment and stuff. And then it said, the reality of the situation. And it showed him with, a whole bunch of cleaning gear just, scrubbing a tank.
Yep.
And I'm like, that is exactly, it hit home to me right then. I'm like, yep, that's like 95% of what I do on a daily basis around the cidery is sanitation and cleaning protocols. It's that's the big difference between a cider that's going to have like a great clean, crisp finish and one that you're going to get all those like Brett tones and like funky character to is just sanitation.
Right. And we are currently drinking the Belgian Abbey hard cider that you make.
Yep, that I bought at the Union Square Green Market from you.
How often are you at the Union Green Smart? How often are you at the market?
We're there every Wednesday now from 8 to 5.
And then I also saw your booth at the South Street Seaport Green Market on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Was that a one-off?
Our current markets are... On Saturday, we're in Fort Greene Park in Brooklyn and in Grand Army Plaza in Brooklyn. And we just opened a tap room 3 weeks ago. So some of those Saturday markets that I had before, I got pulled from so that way I could operate a tap room, which was kind of a great new adventure. Turning two farm boys into bartenders and bar owners is a little bit of a comic experience, but we're trying to get used to it, and then hopefully we'll be back down to keep some of those markets going on Saturdays once we have a grip on our bar end of it.
Yep.
That's pretty awesome. How many different varieties do you serve from your tap room?
Right now we serve four of our ciders on tap, but we have seven taps all together. We also feature three other local cideries because I always feel like it's like craft beer. Like people, we make like great cider, but there's also a lot of other great cider out there, and it gives people a chance when they come up to see us to not only try ours, but to like try some of the other local cideries and see what else is out there along with us, because we're not just trying to make them like a bad seed cider drinker. I think it's more realistic to try to get someone to really appreciate cider and make them a cider drinker, and then occasionally they'll drink like some bad seeds. So
that's right. Rising tide floats all boats.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about, so you guys just opened the tap room. You've had your space for a while. Tell us about how big batches are you guys creating at this time?
Right now, everything is done in 1,000-gallon batches. Quite a few of our ciders, though, are still done in 300-gallon batches. It really depends on the particular. Like our like our mainline ciders, like our dry, our Abbey, and our bourbon barrel cider, they're always like the larger format, like 1,000 gallon, which is like still very tiny compared to, you know, compared to like any like big company, but it feels huge for us compared to a 300 gallon tank, which we'll do like some of our oddball ones for like the tap room and stuff in a smaller format.
We have to take a really quick break. Devin, we will be right back with you here on Ferment About It. Devin Britton of Bad Seed.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're hanging out with Devin Britton from Bad Seed.
Cider company.
Bad Seed Hard Cider. Devin, we were just talking about the new tap room that you're dealing with, and that you have a farm brewery license.
Farm cider license. So I want to talk a little bit about, I'd love to for you to talk about how your tasting room is possible and what you guys are trying to achieve with it.
Well, our tasting room, like, that kind of, we started back, got over... Over a year ago, they started proposing legislation that was going to allow there to be a, much like a farm brewery license, like the cidery category was lacking a farm cidery license that would allow. So under our previous license, we were a wholesale producer and retailer, which only allowed us the ability to wholesale our cider or to sell it direct to customers at farmers markets, where... Oh, sorry, Chris.
I would say, and that's only of your own product, right?
Yeah, that was only our own. And then this license change that happened this past January, the governor passed the bill that allowed it to create a farm cidery license, which completely changed the way we could look at the business. So all of a sudden, then we could have tours and tastings and do a tap room where we could serve other people's cider. And it kind of, as soon as they passed that license, we kind of were quick on the idea of, you know, this is a golden opportunity to really go at this like you would a brewery tap room and create a space within our building that has that kind of beer hall feel, that's a fun place for people to go hang out, and, you know, try our ciders in a fun atmosphere and really get to, like, experience the cidery and kind of get some of our culture in one place. And since we've opened a couple weekends ago, the response has been overwhelmingly great. Like, we keep Saturdays and Sundays keep being, you know, a really busy day for us, and it's a great chance to, you know, invite people in and pull back the curtain and show them around and show them, like, how everything is done and kind of, you know, prove to them that it really is like a farm operation. It's even though we're pretty broadly distributed within our area, like, it still is really a craft cider.
And you opened the tap room kind of around the same on your busiest time of the year.
Yeah, that was kind of our goal when we most of our contractors when we approached this project, were kind of looked at us, and when we were finished, we heard quite a few times that that they admitted to us they thought we were completely nuts because July 4th, we started this project. By the time everything, plans were drawn, everything was organized, and the finished date was October 4th. So within 3 months, we were going to tear our building absolutely apart. Parts of it, you know, literally were demolished to the ground and then rebuilt, and somehow we got a lot more gray hair, but we pulled it off.
Congratulations.
And you're in the middle of harvesting, or you've already harvested this year?
We're just finishing up, like, picking apples. We'll really be, like, our pick-your-own operation. This was last weekend for us, so this week is kind of the week where everything gets cleaned off the trees, and, tonight, Albert's stacking apples in one of our coolers, and then they'll close that cooler up for a few months, and it should have most of our apples picked within, like, the next couple days.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So I'd like to ask, we discussed a little bit about how you came from homebrewing, and you use a lot of not only beer yeast, but you have a hop cider. So you've taken what you've learned as a homebrewer and applied it to cider making. So I would just love for you to share a little bit of your insight in how you go about designing recipes, kind of adapting these beer ingredients, beer yeast or hops, in your ciders, and what kind of projects you have going for the future.
Yeah, definitely. We're kind of, I think we will never lose that, at least I hope we never lose that, like, adventurous, like, you know, we want to try all crazy different ways of making cider, and some of that is, you know, I think there's the people out there who are like, you know, look at us like we're messing with tradition, and, like, why would you put hops in a cider? And I'm like, just because someone made it that way for 2,000 years doesn't mean we need to keep making it that way. We could, like, there's room to tinker there and have fun. Like, it's, to me, I always look at our homebrewing recipes kind of as, like, a guideline. So, like, some of them, like our hop cider, we use an American ale yeast to ferment it. And then we use Cascade hops to hop it. And it really, like, gets that, like, you know, hoppy grapefruit tone. And that one, like, you know, as a, you know, as starting off as a home brewer, like, I'm still drawn to those, like, those beer recipes and just trying to put cider twists on them.
Yeah.
I agree. And I got to say, I am a huge fan of hop ciders. That's probably one of my favorite alcoholic beverages right now, period. I think that ciders capture hops in an absolutely fantastic way. So I say amen to hop ciders and, you know, and doing some new stuff. So I know when I spoke to you before, you were talking about doing a little bit of experimentation. So would you be willing to share some of that with us?
Oh yeah. We've been our big project coming down the pipe for this next year is going to be, we've always had, like, our three core ones, the Dry Abbey and the Bourbon. Now we're looking at this next year. We are going to not only be releasing seasonal ciders, so we're going to do three seasonal ciders this coming year. That's going to start off this winter, but we're also going to be packaging those seasonal ciders in 12-ounce cans, and they're going to be in four packs. So it's kind of like a real exciting thing for us that we're going to not only be launching some of these, like, fun new ciders for seasonal offerings, but that they're going to, you know, be in a really easy to grab and go format for people.
Are you guys going to be buying a canning line or taking advantage of some of the mobile canning people that
we're actually using a mobile canner? We've looked at canning ever since we started. It was kind of always that, like, me and Albert always wanted to put our cider in, like, at least some of them in a can, and we had seen the canning units out in California, and we kept waiting for someone on the East Coast to start a mobile canner, and finally it was this past January, a guy up in the Finger Lakes put together a rig and started one. And, like, we were probably one of his first couple phone calls. Like, I found his website as soon as, like, when I found him in February. I think his website was still half under construction. And we were all about it. We're like, we're going to get this set up. And so we quick made that first seasonal batch of cider, which is like we're going to do three seasonals this next year. The first one's going to come out the end of November. It's going to be our wintertime cider. It's based on like a British bitter cider aged in oak. It's called it's going to be called Old Elmer. And we're excited to put that one out. But then we also have a one for the summertime that's going to be fermented with a Saison beer yeast. So that one's going to be, that one we did test batches of and had them in our tap room and was a huge hit, and people loved that cider. So we're like, that's going to be our perfect, like, kind of along the lines of our dry cider, but it's definitely got like a little bit of like a lager, like a light beer tone to it. And so we're real excited to put that one out there. And then next fall, this time of year, we're going to put out one that's going to be called Apple Pie Dry. And that was kind of our response to a million people asking us for pumpkin ciders. And we're like, me and I were just scratching our heads. And we're like, why do you want us to put squash in cider? It doesn't make any sense. And like, why am I going to dump pumpkins into my cider? But I'm like, really what people want is they want that, like, the cinnamon and nutmeg flavor. So we did some test batches where we took our dry cider and just dumped in a whole bunch of cinnamon sticks and nutmeg. And the result was a cider that you drink it and it tastes like apple pie. So it was kind of a no-brainer, like, hey, we should definitely do this one for our fall release.
How strong can your ciders get legally?
Legally, we can go up to 7. Oh, legally in New York, I can go up to 8.5.
Okay.
Legally, federally, I can only go up to 7%. So the answer is really, I can only go up to 7%.
Right.
But hopefully, there's a bill that they're trying to push now to raise it federally up to 8.5.
And that was just a recent upgrade for the SLA, right? To 8.5.
Yeah, that was just with this new license.
Yeah.
That was something that just came down, and really like progressive on New York's side to like raise it to the 8.5, and before it's going to get raised federally. And so now we're hoping that federal legislation goes through, and then if it does, New York will be one of the first states to be able to take advantage of that raised ABV level. So we're kind of excited that we're in New York.
At least there,
yeah. Yeah, we'll have that opportunity.
How long is the usual turnover rate for let's say the Belgian Abbey cider?
That one, like each of our ciders is completely different. They all take about the same amount of time to ferment. It's the aging time that really varies. And like our Abbey cider, that one's a little bit of a game of patience. It's like a good 4 to 5 months aging on that cider before it's... and that's just because you're using a Belgian beer yeast, so you get lots of those like crazy phenolics from the Belgian beer yeast, and you're really just like waiting for some of them to kind of subside and let some of that ethanol character die down that you get from a Belgian beer yeast. And as it ages, it kind of mellows a little bit, and then more of those apple tones come out, so it kind of gets like a completely different character after about like 4 months in bulk aging.
Mm-hmm. I was saying that we did some short fermentations at the house with some cider or some different yeasts, and some were horrible after short fermentation. But you know, given a month, and it totally changed.
Yep. Turns out you can use Munich yeast for a cider if you give it enough to aging time. So I want to ask, if you're for people homebrewers that are looking to make cider at home, what would be kind of your number one tip? Kind of actually specifically homebrewers that are interested in making cider, what would be your advice to them?
definitely be like that. The cider is, I think, my biggest hang up when I started to make it was I was looking at it like beer, and you have to kind of switch gears and start looking at it like you're making wine. So it's, and that cider in its in itself, apple juice. So like beer, you're not worried about yeast nutrients and nitrogen and stuff, where cider is extremely, apples are very nitrogen deficient. So your biggest hiccup with home brewers typically that we had trouble with in the beginning was adapting to now all of a sudden you have to like have yeast nutrients and feed your yeast, where with a beer a lot of times you don't have that issue. You're just like, you're not worrying about some of that science behind it. It's just kind of beer has enough nitrogen in it that you're fine. So that's kind of, that would be my number one advice, is that you're gonna have to kind of baby the yeast a little bit more to make sure they're happy, because especially with something delicate like cider, if you have an unhappy fermentation, it's an all downhill from there. It's hard to save it.
Right. So it's not just about a lag time. It's about just health, yeast health.
Yeah, definitely. It's like trying to make sure that as they're doing their job, they're going to be as happy as possible and stay true to that yeast, that style. Because as soon as you get like a stress fermentation or something, it's going to completely change the character of that cider.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then if people, where do you distribute your cider now? Where can people find your cider?
I always like, we are actually in quite a few of the Whole Foods in the city. We're also at like a lot of your supermarkets, like the Chico's supermarkets in like the Westchester area and stuff. And we are fairly well distributed, but the company is literally me and Albert at this point. So I always tell customers, I'm like when they ask me that question, I'm like really the best possible salesman that we can have are when customers, if they don't see us at their local liquor store or convenience store or wherever they happen to buy their alcohol, like ask for us, because we are distributed through Manhattan Beer, through like a big distribution company, but we are a small company, so like it's for me and Albert to get out there and go into every shop is sometimes a little crazy, but we love when we get those emails that are from shop owners that are like, we've had multiple customers come in and ask for this. How do I get my hands on it? and that, those are, I love it when they come to us, because we are two farm boys, and the idea of being a salesman is so foreign to us that we're just horrible at it.
But that's like, what also walk, makes it great, though.
We walk into a liquor store and we look like complete goofballs.
So what happens when you guys need more apples than the 60-acre farm can give you?
Well, we kind of, our whole, like, this whole expansion and the building that we, when we kind of went to the drawing board and designed their building, when we did this whole renovation, the building was designed with like a 50,000-gallon cap, and that cap was, that when we hit that point, then we're kind of at that decision-making time where we'll have to figure out how we're going to go forward, whether or not we're going to buy more orchards, which will probably be the case, because we feel very strongly about the we grow our own apples mentality behind the business, that, you know, it's from apples grown by us and fresh juice, and we don't. And I think it's some simple math is like we every there's 20 bushels of apples in every bin of apples, and every bin of apples produces 75 gallons of cider at our press. So we're always looking at like how many bins we're putting away in the cooler. Kind of, mm-hmm. we start we stop looking at them in bins, and now we start looking at them in tanks of cider.
Right.
Awesome. Well, if you guys out there would like to know about Bad Seed, you can go to their website, badseedhardcider.com. The tap room is in Highland, New York, which is about how far? We haven't been up there yet. We want to go.
Oh, you guys definitely gonna have to come up. We're like only 90 miles, about an hour and a half outside of Manhattan, so
that's
not too far. And there's we have a great table in our cidery that's just like a whole bunch of other business cards and rack cards for all the other wineries and stuff. So I always tell people, like, it's a great opportunity. Come on up and see us when we open at noon, and fill out the rest of your day within like 10 or 15 miles of the cidery with everything from distilleries to wineries to other cideries. So it's a great destination.
We'll find a driver for that. But it's awesome. I can't wait to get up there. And you guys do tours by appointment only, right? For people that are interested in coming up, they make appointments and email.
Actually, we kind of were a fairly open door place. It's from noon to 8 on Saturday and noon to 7 on Sunday. And the only time we'll ask that people call ahead is if you got like a group of 8 or more. Then it's, and even then, like if you show up with 10 people, we're not gonna turn you away. It's just, we really, if you have like a group of 8 or more, it's awesome when we have notice, so that way, right, we can kind of set some time aside for just that group to make sure that they have a good experience.
Yep. Well, right on. Devin Britton from Bad Seed Hard Cider, thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah. For making great cider.
And for making great cider,
from New York State apples.
Straight.
Yeah, I'll have to see you guys up there, hopefully.
Absolutely. Definitely. You definitely will.
So next week we'll have Charlie Papazian interview, and we're headed up to Franklin County Cider Days. Chris and I cannot get enough of hard cider, so we're going to do that this weekend. So we'll have some tales from that, as well as Charlie Papazian next Monday on Foment About It.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.